My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle. This is a special edition for Creative Time in the Huffington Post. I'm talking to author Morris Dickstein, and he's phoning in from, are you in Washington, D.C. right now?
No, I'm in New York still.
Ah, back in New York. Okay. So, Morris, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
Well, I teach English and film history at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. I write a lot about contemporary culture, also about 19th and 20th century culture. Recently, I've published a book called Dancing in the Dark about the cultural history of the Depression, approaching the Great Depression through the arts, not the usual way of approaching it. Previously, I've written books about the 60s, about the novel in the post-war period, about criticism, and so on.
Okay. And so your role in the upcoming summit that they've put together, that Creative Time and the New York Public Library put together, is one of not only a thinker, but also someone who can shed some historical light on the situation that we're in now by highlighting things from the past. So maybe talk a little bit about the book that you just put out.
Well, it's a book about how artists dealt with social crisis, how they try to alleviate the crisis, how their work reflected it, how their work gives us a kind of inner history of the crisis, because it deals with it not in terms of numbers or statistics, but the art deals with people's lives in terms of what they were thinking and feeling. And so it gives us not necessarily an average or a completely accurate view, but it gives us at least an intimate view of what people were thinking and feeling as they were dealing with this very prolonged social crisis that lasted a good 12 years.
I mean, you know, my grandmother is a perfect example. Her being born in the early 20s and then living through the Depression, I talked to her recently about this crash and whether what the similarities were between it and the Depression, and she said that there was absolutely no similarity, that we had just experienced a minor bump in comparison to the kind of suffering that her and her family had gone through. And what do you think about that when in relation to the arts and things like that?
Well, I think this is what people feel today because we seem to have escaped Depression 2.0. I think if you look back to the period from last September through last January or February, it would be a somewhat different story where people thought that we were on the precipice of something very much like the Depression. Now, it's true that we've only seen a 10% unemployment rate, and the Depression at its worst saw a 25% unemployment rate. The Depression saw a huge drop in industrial production. Depressions saw huge numbers of mortgage foreclosures, of bank failures, of every conceivable economic indicator. Luckily, we seem to have averted that. On the other hand, there have been some similarities. When this began around September 15, 2008, there was a tremendous crisis of confidence where the credit markets froze up, where people with money suddenly stopped buying, consumer spending, stopped overnight. And that was because people felt suddenly a sense of insecurity that something that they thought never could happen again suddenly seemed to be happening, and it seemed to be starting in much the same way as the Depression, through a banking crisis. That was the real trigger of the Depression, even more than the stock market crash. And so the horrible thing was that one of the results of the Depression was the New Deal, which tried not only to alleviate immediate suffering, but to put in place reforms that would make sure that this could never happen again. I mean, in the end, some of these reforms seem to have worked. Unfortunately, in other cases, there seem to be the safety net seems to be shredded, and I think many new reforms are going to be needed. I wonder, though, whether the sense of crisis is still great enough to get those reforms passed.
That's an excellent point. So when you're talking about artists and how they dealt with the Great Depression, I mean, that's a huge swath to cover. What do you focus on, specific artists, and if so, who?
Well, I focus on a large number of writers, filmmakers, some photographers, playwrights, songwriters. I focus on choreography. It covers a pretty wide ground. I don't try to cover everything. I try to do a number of case studies in depth, but they add up to about 30 or 40 case studies rather than 5 or 6.
Would you mind sharing with us one of your favorites?
Well, I guess one of my favorites is the musicals of Fred and I, of George and Ira Gershwin or Cole Porter, the dance films that featured Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, novels by Faulkner and Nathaniel West and John Steinbeck, screwball comedies, and other movies by Frank Capra, for example.
Right.
Screwball comedies with Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, folk music and politically radical music by folk singer Woody Guthrie, a folk opera like Gershwin's Orpheus and Bess, the popular ballets like Rodeo or Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland, movies and musicals about Hollywood itself, like movies like What Price Hollywood or A Star is Born, novels about Hollywood, such as Fitzgerald's The Last Tycoon or Bud Schulberg's What Makes Sammy Run. I could go on and on. More than I quite realized.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent ground to work from. So when you're looking at these, you know, these pieces that people have made out of the Depression and in the years around that, what are some of the lessons that you see that they've kind of carried forward, some of that creative tenets that were forged from this hardship?
Well, for purposes of this symposium, I'm going to talk mainly about artists who really focused on social crisis and social change. And there, of course, the issue is how to handle it. If you handle it too directly, if you handle it too polemically and ideologically, there's a very good chance that you diminish your power as an artist and that you do only kind of journalistic and topical work. I think there's a real split between those who saw themselves primarily as social critics and as artists only in a secondary way, and those who look for other more oblique ways to deal with the social suffering, with poverty, for example. I think one example of that, a wonderful example of that, is the documentary photography of, say, Dorothea Lange or Walker Evans, which dealt with poverty, which dealt with people who were suffering and poor, without, however, turning it into victim art, without turning them into two-dimensional figures or just representatives of the people with a capital P. They're not entirely simply individuals, but they allow them a certain dignity that some of the more what I call victim art doesn't really allow. And I think this is one of the lessons that I hope to be able to draw today about the way people can grapple with social crisis and social change.
Well, this brings to light an issue that I'd like to get your opinion on. I lived in San Francisco years ago, and it is currently one of the capitals of homelessness in the United States. The city of love is now turned really into the city of the streets, and there, you know, it's not uncommon to see maybe 10 homeless people on per street in downtown San Francisco.
Is that because of liberal municipal laws about homelessness?
Yeah, that, and in addition to the fact that other towns such as Reno and Sacramento and things like that send their homeless people to San Francisco.
Yeah, they've driven them out, really.
Yeah, they put them on a bus and give them a Greyhound ticket.
Well, what are they living on? I mean, are they living on charity? Are they living on the dole from the city or from some, you know?
I'd say a little bit of each, you know. But artists there oftentimes, you know, deal directly with portraying this situation, and in many times, you know, portraying the homeless or the destitute or, you know, the poor, as it are, You know, many people come under the critiques, such as you were mentioning, of victim art. And how would you recommend that people, I mean, you mentioned briefly about giving somebody dignity. How do you give somebody in the street dignity?
Well, one way is instead of treating them as emblems of a kind of poster art of social protest, to really grapple with the reality of their lives. The truth is that the homeless, while we think of the homeless as a single category, there are probably as many different kinds of homeless people and as many different kinds of situations that they're in and places that they come from as there are people there. And I think one of the things that Walker Evans and James Agee did with their sharecropper families in the South was that they actually went to live with them. They explored the day-to-day reality of their lives. They didn't simply, parachute in as social tourists at the behest of some kind of political mission on their part. And I think, therefore, you know, the images that we have of them and the prose that James Agee wrote about them is really both complex and really indelible. It didn't reach the audience very much at the time, but in retrospect, it's almost the most powerful single work produced by the documentary movement in the 1930s.
Hmm. Right, but what can I say? I totally agree with you. I'm not going to play any kind of devil's advocate because you're right on.
Sure. I think filmmakers have done the same thing. I think that some filmmakers are doing so now, even before the current recession. Filmmakers were dealing with, you might say, marginal, usually small independent films, films like Wendy and Lucy, for example, about people living very close to the edge. I think the whole indie aesthetic is very amenable to this. It's very, it's almost geared up to deal with these marginal lives, and I suspect we'll be seeing a lot more of that.
Right. Well, in closing, what would you say that, you know, it's a short presentation. You know, there's a lot of presenters at this summit, and it's just going to be a rapid fire of information, really, for most of the audience. But what would you say that you would like people to walk away from your presentation with?
I'd like them to walk away with a sense of, first of all, how the variety of ways that people during the Depression dealt with the enormous quantity of human misery and with the very large desire for social change during the period. And I'd like them to see that some of those ways, in the end, have proved more effective and more enduring than others. If I can achieve that, then I think that I will have succeeded.
Well, thank you so much, Morris.
You're very welcome.
My name is Zephyr Throle. You're listening to Frank Prattle. This is a special edition for the Huffington Post covering the Creative Times Summit, Revolutions in Public Practice. My special guest is Morris Dickstein, the distinguished author and professor here in New York City. Thank you so much.
Thank you.